Accession number 28500, Reel 8.
And were you still having to look after your own, like, dress, you know, your own kit and equipment?
Oh, yes. We did that ourselves too, keeping us right. And they had a very good laundry service. You put your laundry in and it came back in a couple of days, and that was good. But our equipment and the footwear and all that sort of thing was all done by ourselves. Yeah.
And did you still get kit inspections? You know.
No. We were shown kit inspections and how they should be laid out and the procedure and that too. But of course we all knew that at Gordon Barracks, so we didn't learn anything right there. It was good.
And so was there other Gordon Highlanders with you? Were there other Gordon Highlander soldiers with you?
No, I was the only Gordon, but we had a Black Watch and an Argyll. So there were three from Scotland. That was good.
Okay. And so did you take your kilt and everything down with you? Did you have your normal kit with you? Or were you issued with new kit?
We took everything. We took all our kit with us. Yeah, we got the extra kit at the Octo. If you wanted, you could buy extra kit too. If you wanted it too, you could. It was quite possible to do that. If you wanted the extra shirt, you could do that. But it was all our own kit.
And do you remember the additional kit that they supplied you? Do you remember what they gave you as the additional kit?
There was epaulettes for your shoulder. We didn't have that when we went there, but that was put up. And then you had to, as you came to the close of your training, your tunic. Officer's tunic, that had to be done. But then we didn't have that when we left. We were just in battle dress and showing us one star, second lieutenant, one star, and we went back up the train like that, back to Gordon Barracks with a special pass, an officer's pass, which we. 19A, and that was the one that we carried, which you produced wherever you went to show when you had a photograph, you know, it's like a passport, you see. But that was what happened there.
And did this 19A, did that give you special privileges?
Oh yeah, it did, yeah, so I'm quite sure it did. It just let you see that you were moving up the scale and things were probably going to be, you'd have more responsibility, but life would be a little bit better. You know, you'd have better feeding, meals, which you could pay for and that sort of thing. So it just started you off like that. So you knew what to expect when you went to an officer's mess then. So that was good.
Okay. So what type of training did they actually give you down at Morecambe, you know, in what way was it different to what, like, a private would get?
It was always based on the fact that you would be training soldiers, you'd be leading soldiers, so that that was the main thing, that whatever you did, you were leading them. You're setting an example to them, and you're in command of them. That was it. Whether it was just a section or a platoon, it was normally a platoon with a young officer, a platoon, and maybe 30 odd men in that platoon, and that was your first. That was your first command once you were commissioned. Yep. So that's how that worked out. Of course, coming back to Gordon Barracks, as I did, which was most unusual. I just carried on instructing, but as an officer, not as a sergeant. That was the only difference. So that I had to take more responsibility. I had to oversee training, you know, in the company, and the different squads go around and see them training and help the instructors if they needed help with that, because I had done a lot of training myself, so I understood what was required. Whereas you've got a lot of young officers coming, you know, who'd never trained or instructed, and they were at a great disadvantage. But I just came back and just stepped into the instruction thing again too. And giving lectures was another thing that you got to do, because they reckoned that when you went to Octo, you were taught various, you know, the regimental history, the history, the geography, and you could impart that to the platoons under your command at the barracks.
Okay, so it was all part of the training?
Yes.
Okay. And you spoke about you could buy extra things, you know, when you were at Octo, whether it be a shirt or something.
Yeah.
By becoming an officer, was this more the accepted way, you know, of like buying additional kit or?
Yes, well, it was obvious that an officer probably required more kit than a private soldier, changing more often and so forth, so that you always bought spare shirts and spare vests and spare socks and stuff like that, and just to make it much easier to carry out your duties, because you had more responsibility, and therefore you had to ensure that you were properly dressed at all times. It didn't matter where you were properly dressed. So it was up to you, if you were short of anything, to make sure that you went to the quartermaster and signed on the dotted line and paid for it.
And with the wages that you would have got as an officer, or as an officer in training, were these additional items, were they considered quite expensive, or were they reasonably priced?
No, there were certain things that you could get without having to pay. You know, if a vest was wearing or or a hole appeared, and you could hand it in and you got issued with a new one. But if you wanted to buy extra, you could do, but you had to pay for it. That was the only thing.
And was it, so it wasn't considered too expensive?
No, as I remember it, the clothing was not expensive, no.
And whilst on this officer training course, were you being continually assessed as well?
Oh, yes. Oh, you were watched the whole time. You were watched the whole time. And you were taught, just like a platoon, the officer who was responsible for you, he would have maybe 20 cadets, and you were with him all the time. And he gave you the different jobs to do and different things to do. So he was watching and reporting on you each month as you went through your stages.
And did everyone make the grade, or were some people?
Well, you always got the one or two who, you know, didn't do too well. And they were retarded. They were put back and had to do an extra, another, maybe a couple of months. So that was what was done. If you didn't meet the grade, then you would be put back, and you get a chance to pick up where you lost. And if that didn't happen, then you might be told, well, you think you should revert and go back to where you came from. But very fair, very fair. And any characters I saw who failed, a lack of they hadn't the confidence in front of men, in front of speaking. And of course, as an instructor, that was where you benefited, because if you'd been instructing recruits all the time, it was only too easy to stand up and give off a story, you know, no problem. But you could see the point where someone would never have done that, must have found it very difficult. And you'd see everybody watching you, waiting to see if you make a mistake or say something stupid. But oh no, it was all taken in good fun too, you know.
And thinking about your instructing, but your instructing overall, do you remember, like, when you first started, you know, in front of a class or in a lecture room or somewhere, do you ever remember being nervous just as you were about to stand there and give your talk?
Oh yes. You never got any warning. You know, you say, McCarthy, talk about so-and-so. You just had to get up and talk. And it made you pay attention. And you had to be always ready to give a talk and just do the best you could. I mean, they knew, they gave you something, some things that might be quite difficult. But provided you gave a showing and spoke sensibly, then you were okay. No problem. That's good.
And in amongst the men that you were with, was there any, like, young officers, you know, men who had came right into the officer rank, or were they all men who had went, like, through the ranks like yourself?
No, they all came under cadets. You were an officer cadet. And there might have been one or two who might have had a previous experience, you know, a short experience, but on the main, you came in complete from as another rank. You know, for either a corporal, a lance corporal, or a sergeant, or whatever the one, you got sergeant majors there too, you know, going up for commission. Yes? Oh, yes. Oh, no, that's one thing about the army. If they saw that you were worth taking an interest in, they didn't hold you back. They were very good that way. Full marks there.
And how was the discipline at the officer cadet training unit? Was it quite strict, or were they more relaxed?
Different times. On parade, it was quite strict. But off parade, it was relaxed. And then you got times where you might be giving a talk or abaca or whatever you had to do, and that was quite relaxed. But on the drill square, that it was just the same as it was before, as an orderly rank. You had to pay attention and you had to carry out the drill. And of course, we all enjoyed the drill when you got the opportunity to drill. It was good.
And was there anyone who ever received any punishment, you know, whilst out in the drill square or something?
Oh, you got, especially at weekends, you got the odd one coming in late. And he would go up before the company commander and get ticked off. And as long as it didn't happen again, you were all right. But if it happened again, then you would be penalised one way or another.
Did you ever get in late?
No, I always managed to keep myself clear of that, but it did happen. It did happen. You got the odd one or two. They might have been at a party and just got a little bit tiddly and they came in late. And it didn't matter whether it was a minute late or an hour late, it made no difference. It was still late. This one was good.
And were you far from Morecambe itself, or were you actually in Morecambe?
Well, actually in Morecambe, yes. Morecambe, we were just off a side street, and the barracks itself was just off one of the side streets coming off the main street in Morecambe. A nice little town, clean town, and a huge expanse of beach, Morecambe Beach. Yes, it was good.
And at the level that you were there, did you get time off? You know, did you get to go out in the evening or weekends?
Oh yes, that was very reasonable. If you wanted to go out to say a film or something like that, there was no, as long as you were back in time, 1 minute before midnight, as long as you stepped through the guard room, then they were right, because you had to go through the guard room just the same as you did before. And that was good. Oh no, and you got every opportunity to take time off for various things if it was possible. And then of course the other great thing was that they laid on certain things for you, which were good. For example, the best one we had was that the my new Antonio, I forget his name though. The huge these huge seaplanes were built at the other end of the Morecambe Bay. That was where they were built. And we were invited out for a whole day to visit that place. And it was a wonderful sight. There was five of these planes being built, all at different stages. And there was one completed. And we all got the opportunity to go up for a quick flight around the bay and back. So that was all the time that I'd ever been in a seaplane. But it was good. Things like that, you know. And there was another, to the lakes. We were very close, of course, to the lakes. And you could go there and spend a day there and come back again. And it would usually be a coach party. And you'd stay all day and come back at night. Things like that, which made life reasonable. But that one with the seaplanes, that was a good one. It was really lovely. I'll never forget that.
And the seaplanes, were they being built for the RAF?
Oh yes, they were being built for the RAF. Right.
So was this quite secret? You know, getting along to see this, would this have been quite?
Oh, it was very strict, very strict. But there was never any any problem, as far as I remember, you know, with spying or carrying on, because the Germans must have known perfectly well where they were being built. They must have known that. But but very, very strict getting in and getting out. Yeah.
And was Morecambe ever a target of the Germans?
No, not to my knowledge. No. It just seemed to be a quiet backwater, you know.
And you mentioned being close to the lakes as well. Was the lake area ever used for like route marches or?
Oh yes. Well, we did a lot of route marches in those areas, you know, because a lot of beautiful country, some lovely countryside, and if you're able to spend a day route marching through some of the lovely country, it was worthwhile. It was good. And it was all laid on so that, you know, you could get a snack or that, and there's always a pub here or a pub there, something you could stop and get a sandwich and then carry on again. Oh, it was well done. Yeah.
Were you not encouraged to take day rations with you, no?
If you were going away for the whole day, but normally, if that was the case, then of course you took sandwiches with you. You were dished up the sandwiches, and that was your lunch or whatever it would be for the day, and come back for the proper meals at night. Yeah.
And so whilst you were at Okto,
yes.
Were you still getting things like rifle training?
Oh yes. That never stopped. Section training, rifle training, all part and parcel of the build up of the army. Yeah.
Right, okay. And what about guard duties? You know, when you had been in the lower ranks, you had mentioned guard duties. Did you still have to do guard duties down there?
Yes, we still had to do guard duties, but they weren't long duties. It was maybe a night duty at night, and not like the one before where you had to spend the whole day, you know, 24-hour guard. Oh no, this was maybe just a 10-12-hour guard at night. And it only came round, you know, it didn't come round very often, but You still had to do that, yeah.
And was your role in this guard duty now changed? Were you taking on more of a superior's role, you know, like a leader role within the guard duty, or were you just all taking a share?
Well, all took a share, just, yeah.
Okay. And for recreation, was there any sports laid on, like football or rugby?
Oh yes, there was a lot of that. Rugby, football, hockey. You all got the chance to play, and you were encouraged to play. And there was a half day, a sports half day, or that you could bet your boots it would be football, rugby, or something, whatever it would be. And that was encouraged. Yes.
Did Did you play?
Oh yes, I played. I played in the hockey team, in the rugby team, and in the football team, and also in the firing on the ranges. You know, the team was there. Was good. Oh yeah, I took part in all these things. It was good.
And when you did go into Morecambe, you know, when you were in Morecambe in your time off, how did the civilians treat you?
Well, I think they were they were quite happy, you know, because they knew we were all being trained as officers, and there wasn't this hooliganism or, you know, or bad spirit or that. They expected you to set an example, to be good, you know, go about the street smart and tidy, and so that was all right. But there wasn't much of that, you know. I never came across even with the other ranks or that. The behaviour was pretty good. It's pretty good.
And was it very competitive at this college? You know, was everybody trying to make the grade to become an officer?
Oh, definitely. Oh yes, and then you had exams. You see, it's the same as back at school. Exams, and you get exam papers, and you would you'd have a desk, just the same as school, a desk, and you would complete the paper and hand it in to the officer in charge, and that was all sorted up, and you were assessed on that, you know, amount of marks out of 100 or whatever it was, and that was how they assessed you as to education and the ability to do homework and stuff. Yeah.
And were the exams quite near the end of the course?
Yes, there was one or two pretty hard exams at the finish. You know, a whole day, and you were kept at it. And but you just handed the papers in, finished the paper, handed it in, and as soon as you finished, you could go. Finished.
And do you think you had to wait a long time to know the results?
Oh no, the results came through pretty quick, and on the last day, of course, it was all shown on the board, the marks that you had attained and all the different categories. You know, it was good because everybody saw what they had done, and you could see how you had done with regard to the other fellows. Some were very good, some not so good, but it just let you see what you had achieved. That was the thing. Yeah.
And were you happy with your result?
Oh yes. Oh, I was quite happy. I was quite happy, and our commanding officer was an excellent character. He lost an eye in the First World War, and he had a great sense of humour, and it was obvious that as he'd been through the war and suffered in the war, he had plenty of time for the young officers. And he was very good that way. He was good. And I always remember, the thing I always remember about him was that our last night, before we departed next day, we had a party. And he came up to me and he said, William, he said, how have you enjoyed your course here? I said, oh yes, much so, very much so. I said, it's been really good. He said, well, he says, all I can say to you is this. He said, you've worked hard. And he said, I just want to leave you with a little story which he had given him during the First World War. And this is what he said to me. He said, in times of stress, which you'll find often in war, times of stress and danger, he said, just always remember this. Just pause for a second or two and just say to yourself, what am I trying to do? And I thought that was really wonderful. And then I forgot that, you know, what am I trying to do? He said, by remembering that, he said, it means simply that you, when something faces you and you're not just quite sure which way you're going to go or what you're going to do, just stop for a moment and just say to yourself, what am I trying to do? And he says, something will spark you know, and it'll divert you and put you on the right track. And it was so true, the times that happened, and I never forgot him for that. You know? So that was good advice, good, very sensible. But he was a really dear old fella, he was.
But this was down at the officer training, was
oh,
it?
Oh, yes, all right. Daddy Roger, we called him Daddy because, well, he was fairly old. And of course, he's just the one eye. And what a wonderful character.
And did he know that you called him Daddy Roger, or was that just behind his back?
Oh, no, he knew we referred to him as Daddy. He knew that.
He was okay about it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, he was a really good fella.
Okay. And can I ask you one thing about, you mentioned it the last time we met, and you spoke about a revolver. Was it once you became an officer that you got a revolver?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You were issued either with a Smith & Wesson, S&W, or a Webley. And that became your possession, you signed for it, and it was your possession, and you carried it with you always.
Okay. And whilst you were at OCTU, did they train you in the use of a revolver?
Oh yes, we got a lot of revolver practice, which was good, because it was something that you very seldom got, because there was no need for it, because other ranks didn't carry revolvers, you see, so we got a lot of training, revolver training, and it became very popular, because we used to have shoots, you know, highest mark there, and money on the table, that, and it was good fun. You won some and you lost some, but it was good. Oh yes, with a lot of revolver practice.
And how did you find that? Is it a lot different from firing a rifle?
Rifle, no. It was simply a question of being able to point, you know, without having to aim, you know, point. And we never bothered about aiming. We just you had a sense. You got a sense of direction. You know, and so you didn't need to aim the same as you had to do with a rifle. Although, it's just a question of practice. Just practice.
Did you find it strange at first? Because you've been quite accustomed to rifles with being, like, on the biggest stage.
Oh, yes, I'd never handled a revolver before, so this was the first time that you had handled one. And but like everything else, once you got your own revolver, you see, You got the weight of it, and you got how to handle it, and you became accustomed to it. It just became second nature, you know, the point or whatever you wanted to do. That was all right, yeah.
And why do you think they gave the officers a rifle? Was there a purpose for this rifle?
Yeah, a revolver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, a revolver.
Yes, a revolver, yes. Well, one of the main things, excuses that were made with that was this, that an officer carrying a revolver, it meant that both his hands were clear. And he could hold maps, fold maps, books, or write for that, and didn't need to worry. Whereas with a rifle, you had to lay it down, or you had to stand it up, or lay that. But with a revolver, it was in your holster, and you had free hands. That was the main thing, really. But of course, you learned from as time went on that. I didn't know that. I learned that at Loch Eilert, at the commando there, when they said, "Look, as an officer, if you've got a revolver, then your revolver's got to be on your back, so you can't see it, because the German snipers are just watching for somebody who's got a revolver." And a lanyard around your neck here, and a revolver stuck here, and that you become a casualty in a very short time. But then I took their advice right from the start, from Loch Eilert, by always carrying a rifle. So that anybody watching me through a telescope or that would say, oh, he's obviously a soldier, you see, because he hasn't got a revolver, and he's carrying a rifle in front of him. And there's no doubt, I'm quite convinced that saves a lot of lives, you know. So the moment you showed off a revolver, you could bet your boots that somebody would take a pot at you, you know, in a short time. So you learned as you went along.